The Bad Boy at Home, and His Experiences in Trying to Become an Editor 1885. Chapter 1. Why He Chooses a Profession. Highfalutin Prologue, with Some Bare Possibilities. Prospectus of the Daily Buster. Mr. Diary. I've been intending ever since I got home from Europe, to begin written in a diary, but I ain't had no time, 'cause my chum Jimmy and me has been putting in our days having fun. I've got to give all that sort of thing up now, 'cause I've accepted a persishun and a unherbel profession, and when I get to be a man, and react the top rung of the ladder, I'm going to mock New York howl. Pa, he wanted me to go to school, but I couldn't see it at all, 'cause a feller what's always going to school I don't never know nothing but baseballin' and prize fittin' when he gets through. All them fellers what write in diaries begin by usin' a lot of highfalutin words what sound awful big but don't mean nothing, so I guess I'll be in the fashion, so here goes. You're only a quire of common newspaper, Mr. Diary, so you needn't put on so many airs over your clean white dress, what only needs a morocco leather mantle and gilt bracelets to make you look like you belong to the Astor House dude. We all know you was made of rags, and them rags might once have been in the mazy, lacy labyrinths of white linen wadda-dashously pressed against the tender form of Lillian, the dudine. If you weren't there you might have been all ablaze with chain stitches and crushed onion stripes, closely encircling a couple of bin poles, no, not exactly bin poles, but the sharply, shatterly lower limbs of Sarah Jane Bernhardt, the actress what got mashed on damn all her. Then, Egan, you might have been on some infantile prospect of preservant, but you didn't stay on him long, 'cause babies and safety pins made you tired. Anyway you've got a history, 'cause them little black spots on your right bosom looks like they might once have been part of Mrs. Dr. Walker's patent back action, masculine, dress reform trousers, what she sent to the paper mill to get ground up in ter paper to mock books for the enlightenment of the women of our country. How's that for high, Mr. Diary? My muse come plague-y near running away with me, so I had to whistle down brakes, and slow her up. Now I'll begin to record my doings on your pages, so that, should the toes of my boots be applied to the patent bucket early in my useful career, the whole world'll know what a tree sure so she has lost. I ain't given you any biled lasses candy, but don't you let your memorizing origins lose sight of the fact that I, Georgie, the bad boy what spent a Europe, ain't no slouch. My pa says I'm a genius. I guess he's bout right, only he orter said I was a budding one, 'cause my hankering after a professional career has led me to accept a position in the public opinion moldin' shop what's known as the Daily Buster, Joe Gilley, editor and proprietor. Subscription price, $5 per year. No true bull to sign receipts. And bespshell arrangements with ex-Senator Satan enables us to give our delinquent subscribers cheap excursion rates to the hot sulfur baths, via the Hades short line, our fit-in editor Corn Doctor. This paper is run on red-hot independent principles, in a spicy, sparkling man hair. In politics our motto is, honest men, regardless of party, candidates with burls accepted. The above is the prospectus of the journalistic venture in which I have embarked in the capacity of typographical devil. So now Mr. Diary, look out for the breakers. Chapter 2. His first interview. Will they be consent to a place that is hotter than this? A labor-saved machine. Beer. Gasoline and prohibition. I've just got my supper, so I guess I'll tell you about my first day's experience on the Daily Buster. I was down to the office at 7 o'clock, and the manager and editor, he deadled me to interview, the old papers and dust, on the floor. By the aid of a broom, what was so old, it was most bald-headed, I succeeded in completely ridding the floor of its surplus stock of literature, and cherbacky balls, what them printers spit out, when they wanted to use their mouths, to consign some feller, what wrote orful to Halifax, or some other mild climat. I wonder if everybody, what them printers damn, goes to Hades, 'cause, if they do, and all printin' offices is like urn, I guess us fellers won't have much company in heaven when we get there. They all are pari to have a particular spite against a Mr. Copy, 'cause I heard him being damned, more'n 100 times today. I guess the poor feller ain't got no show at all. I never seen the workings of a dither's sanctuary before. I use it or wonder, how they wrote all them long articles what everybody said showed the great genius of the editor, but I never knowed till this morning about the labor-savin' machine, what is made of 2 pieces of steel, with sharp points on one end, and 2 rings on the other, what slip over the editor's fingers. When he's got them on, he takes off his shoes and stockings, and wades inter a lot of old newspapers, clipping out little bits here and there, and pasting them on a sheet of white paper. The machine works splendid, and Mr. Gilley says it's a sure antidote against scribbler's paralysis, what all great writers is troubled with. Just for dinner the editor begun to get her full dry written article headed, Pernicious Butson, or, Wholesale Slaughter, caused by the adulteration of beer with arsenic, so he sent me down to the barroom next door to get him a bottle of beer on 30 days' time. I just got back to the sanctum, and was taking out the cork, when the Methodist minister come in to arrange bout a big prohibition rally what comes off next week. He looked her full suspicious at the bottle, till the editor told me to take that bottle of gasoline, to the foreman, and tell him to wash the forms with it, and be sure not to get it near a light, cause gasoline was awful explosive. I guess it got exploded cause, when the minister was gone, I went out to get it, and I couldn't even find a smell of it, so I had ter go round to the next block for another, cause the editor's face wasn't good for more in one, in the same place, in one day. Say, Mr. Diary, did you ever get a whiff of the smell, thrown out by the paste pot, in an editor's office, what was established in 49? Cause, if you never did, you can't appreciate how delightful the concentrated extract of half a dozen glue factories would be, in comparison. This afternoon the editor politely requested me to consign the contents of ours to their last rest in place in the ash heap, in our backyard. Many a silent tear did I shed over the cold and clammy remains of hundreds of cockroaches, whose young and useful lives came to such a sad and untimely end, in their brave efforts to explore the mysterious and fathomless depths of the Buster's paste pot. I guess I must have forgot to wash my hands for supper, cause Pa's down in the cellar setting a trap for a polecat, and Ma she swears she's going to have a carpenter take up the dining room floor tomorrow morning, and hunt up the rat what crawled under there and died. Chapter 3. The Exchange Fiend. She cargo all queet. The fiend goes abroad. His great spirit appled. The buried hopes of a romantic poet. Our office has got what is called a exchange fiend what comes in every morning when we get the mail and looks over all the papers, cause he's too mean to buy his own readin matter. I know by the way the editor looks at him, he'd like to kick him down 3 flights of steep steps, but I guess he borrowed a dime from him, about 10 years ago, and he's Friday he'll talk the office furniture for it. I always like to help my employers out or a tight place, so, this morning, I run across a paper that was printed this day several years ago, so I laid it down on the table where the fiend strike at the first thing, and then I got her full busy dust in the bookcase. When he come in, he picked up the paper and looked down the headlines. I seen he was getting awful excited, then he snatched up his hat and seeker stump, and run like he was chased by lightning. Pretty soon, there was more than 5,000 people on the street in front of the office, and the editor got awful scared, cause he thought they was going to run him out of town, on account of the big sozzle scandal what he published yesterday, so he sent me to the door to see what they all wanted. When I got there the people was most crazy for news from the Chicago fire. I told them to hold on and we'd have out an extra in a few minutes, and then I showed the editor the paper what the fiend was reading, what gave a big account of the Chicago fire. When we got out our extra, we sold about 10,000 copies, with article, what read like this. The latest dispatches from that city report Chicago all quaint, thanks to the forethought of the mayor, in swearing in a large number of extra perlies, for service during the sitting of the humorists convention, and the great precautions taken by common council to see that no liquor was sold to delegates. You bet there was a mad crowd, when they found out there warn't no fire at all in Chicago. The exchange fiend's gone to New Jersey, cause it'll have time to blow over, for Congress can promulgate a tradition treaty, with that government. This afternoon, I was appalled, my great big spirit fell down into my shoes, like a jump of lead. Alas how great the breach is, tween the author, and the columns of a newspaper, and how short the road, what leads to the waste basket, especially the one, in a printing office like the Daily Buster, where the basket covers bout a square acre of floor. I was put to cleaning up the waste basket, so as we'd have the paper ready, for the junk man, what calls round with his 6-horse team of government mules, once a week. I cold and help lingering over the contents, and sighing, when I thought, of the hopes what lied buried there. There was one little piece of poultry, written on a sheet of electric blue paper, and scented with otto of roses, and indited to my dear George. I wonder if the poultryess meant me, when she wrote it, cause if she did, she struck it just right, for I've got it stowed away, in my pants pocket next my heart. There was a neuter roll of manuscript, what weighed a pound, and come by express, without bind paid. I guess the editor was mad, when he paid 50 cents charges, and found out it warn't no birthday present. A note with it, read like this. My dear editor Buster. The enclosed story entitled Dude Ish Dick, The Flirt and Corn Doctor of Horse Car Number 36, is worth $500, but in complement of the high stand-in of your Value Bell Journal, I will allow you to publish it for note then, if you will send me papers containing it. Yours truly. Sammy Lane, author. What unappreciated BN's editors are. When they would let a genius what was capable of pen in the following lines go unrewarded. A big politician named Kelly, had a gripping pain in his belly. He used St. Jacob's oil, and now he's new seen a boil, but his pain has left him by golly. Chapter 4. He ain't no typographical cyclopeda. Serious complications, with a temporary aberration. A print and office feed. I'm in a peck of true bell today, what I'll have tear trust tear providence to get me outer. A typographical devil ain't supposed to know everything, anyway. Now the whole office is mad at me, cause I ain't a walkin' cyclopeda of typographical two. In the first place, the foreman of the composing room's mad, cause when he told me to fetch him a long stick, I went down street and hunted round till I struck a house what was bind plastered, and brought him back a good laugh. When I give it to him I thought there was a eruption from a volcano, the way he swore at me. He said he'd a notion to break it over my back, for not having sense enough to know that he bought his firewood by the cord. Why didn't he tell me in the first place he wanted that thing what printers used to set type in? Now the cashier's on his ear, cause he sent me out there by a wooden galley. I knowed very well I couldn't make no mistake there, cause I'm posted on ship's kitchens. So I arsed him how big a one he wanted. He said medium, so I went up to Johnny Roach's shipyard and had them send a galley down to the office, what would be big enough for a good sized schooner. You erter seen the cashier's face, when the 6-horse team stopped in front of the door A. The driver was going to leave the galley anyway, but the cashier paid him to haul it back, and wrote Mr. Roach that their boy was laboring under a slight aberration of the mind when he ordered it. But I think it's his mind what's got the aberrations instead, from sitting up so late with the red-headed grass widder what keeps the boarding house cross the street from our house. If it hadn't, why didn't he tell me he warranted a galley for keeping type in, when the composing stick's full? Fellers like him order be put on ice, cause they're too fresh to keep long. He only needs a tail to be a thoroughbred dude, cause he's got everything else what belongs to one. On my way home, at noon, I stopped to see a feller what was selling prize packets, at the corner of Nassau Street, so I didn't get time to eat much dinner. I was getting awful hungry about 4 o'clock, when the editor arsed me if I thought I could clear up the pie what was on the impassin' stone. I didn't vart to let him see I was so awful hungry, so I told him I didn't know. Well, said he, there's nothing like trying, the foreman'll show you where it is. I couldn't keep back my gratification, so I thanked him 3 or 4 times. You bet I was mad, when I found out there vart no cherry or mince pie, not even dried apple, but only a lot of type what had got mixed up. I think it's real many to make a little boy like me think he's going to get a big feed, and then not give him anything but a lot of lead what nobody else will try to eat. Hey. You erter see our impus and stone, it must be awful valuable. It's a great flat piece of marble, tattooed, all over, with funny hieroglyphics. I guess it's one of the old tombstones what come from Anson Troy. It's a wound or the editor don't sell it to the Smithsonian Institute, stead of using it for layin' forms on, it's so orful impison. Chapter 5. A visit from a distinguished anti-monopolist typographical tarry wrist. He exposes a murderous conspiracy. A threat and resignation. This morning our office was on heard by a visit from a typographical tarry wrist. What introduced himself as John McNamee. He said he'd just returned from an extensive visit in the western states, where he'd been for some time, for the benefit of his health. He is one of the most distinguished members of the political parties, called anti-monopolists. I admire a man what practices what he preaches. Now, this Mr. McNamee has never been known to contribute a cent to supporting our great railroad monopolists, although he has traveled all over the United States by rail. Beside that, he wouldn't accept any accommodation short of a Green Line sleeper. When I arsed him why he didn't wear his gold watch chain and silk hat, like all other politicians, he said his party was endeavoring to freeze out the big clothing monopolies by wearing their duds till they fell off. I noticed his bust some swelling with pride, as he spoke of the fruits their labor had brought forth in the failure of so many great clothing firms. He condescended to throw in some type, and when he got through, him and a couple of our printers adjourned downstairs to partake of a champagne lunch. I guess he warn't used to drinking light wines, cause he's been sleeping under the paper cutter all the afternoon, dreaming that he was by nominated for president on the great anti-monopolist ticket. Just before dinner the editor told me to tell the makeup man to kill Lawrence Rickard. Now, His store is where my pa buys all his groceries, and his wife and ma's were full good chums, and belong to the same sewing circle. Mr. Rickard always treated me right, and I didn't like to see a couple of bloodthirsty villains kill him without giving him time to say his prayers, so I called into his store and told him he'd better skip out or lay low, cause the editor was awful mad at him, and had ordered another feller to kill him. He said he'd fix him. So right after dinner a couple of perlice come up to the office and arrested Mr. Gilly and the makeup man for conspiracy to murder, and they had to explain it, and pay all the costs. I took a little vacation this afternoon, and went out fishing, cause I remembered what Pa says after his kissed Ma by telephone. Distance lends enchantment to the view. So I thought them two bad men wild be more enchanted with me if I kept at a safe distance. I'm awful fraud in my journalistic career's going to be broken off short, but I don't think they order blamed me, cause the editor shut der told me to tell the makeup man to take out that local notice what read, fresh vegetables and green truck received daily, at L.I. Rickard's grocery, instead of making me tell him to kill me.